Chase and Big Joe Show, brought to you by Omni Nashville Hotel, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan and Nick Keyser in for Chase and Big Joe today. Nick Frazier with us as well. Big Joe will be on again at 2 o'clock today with Jill Jelnick from Fox 17. They did a really good job yesterday. I enjoyed listening to them. And they'll be back at it again from 2 to 6 in place of Jared, who, like Chase, is on vacation. So yesterday, you know, as I am wont to do, I was scrolling through Twitter, you know, developing arthritis in my thumbs. And I came across a clip.
As a writer.
Yep. I came across a clip from the Pardon My Take podcast. They had an interview with Joe Burrow, of course, Cincinnati Bengals starting quarterback. And they were talking about the perfect schedule. Now, a couple of months ago, Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, addressed the idea of an 18-game schedule. And it's not something that I think is immediate, but he did say, according to NFL.com, it is something the league considers as part of its long-range plans. He said, quote, the key thing for us at looking at making sure we continue to do the things that make our game safer, if I didn't just flub that quote. 17 games is a long season, so we want to make sure we look at that and make sure that we continue the safety efforts. He said that the two things that need to be agreed upon are whether an 18-game schedule is good for player health and the quality of the game. Well, the Part of My Take hosts asked Joe Burrow how he would lay out an 18-game schedule, and I have to say, I think he's onto something.
What do you think the perfect football schedule is in terms of weeks and bye weeks?
How many games are we playing?
You tell me.
18.
18? Got to have two bye weeks.
I like that.
And I think it'd be cool to do a normal bye week schedule that it is now. Like, have it spread out. But then, like, week 13, do, like, the Pro Bowl break where you're doing, like, the 7-on-7 and all the skills challenges like the NBA does, because I think that would get more ratings for the Pro Bowl.
Yes.
And then it would also give everybody that bye week going into like the last six games of the year.
My big idea is, especially now with the expanded college football playoff, you do the week before Christmas, no NFL, college football playoffs, give everyone a break to go do their shopping.
Yeah, I'm with that.
Yeah, and then you get everyone reset. The whole league is on a level playing field.
And then you have
stretch.
Guys that are injured that would be able to potentially come back, and you want your best players out there as a league. You want them in the last 6 weeks of the season. You want your best players on the field. So I think that would be a smart idea.
I think we fix football. And then you get the President's Day Monday after the Super Bowl off.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. When would that Super Bowl then fall? Because that would be a challenge, but that would be perfect.
Perfect.
So that was Joe Burrow on the Part of My Take podcast on what his ideal NFL schedule would look like. 18 games, a bye week for every team, two bye weeks. The second bye week, every team is off. You put the Pro Bowl events, because it's not really a game anymore. It's not a game anymore. It's a skills competition.
Yeah, it's a skills comp.
You put that in that second bye week, so you get ratings for the Pro Bowl, because if I'm not mistaken, the Pro Bowl now is in the weekend between the end of the championship games and the Super Bowl. So I haven't watched the Pro Bowl in years.
No, nope,
I cannot remember the last time I watched the NFL Pro Bowl, even when it was an actual game. It's just the placement of the game is just very strange.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is, because of the players who are participating in the Super Bowl, they're not participating in the Pro Bowl. So you get a lot of players who probably shouldn't be Pro Bowlers playing in the game. Now I'm trying to think who, and maybe Frazier can help me. There was a Ravens quarterback.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking
a few
too.
Years ago.
Yeah,
was it Tyler Huntley?
Yes, it was Huntley. Yeah.
He was in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It just makes no sense. So
Gardner Minshew, he had a really good season last year.
Well, Minshew magic is still a thing as far as I'm concerned. But the idea of having the Pro Bowl, like in like the week 13, everybody's off. You do the game then. You juice up those ratings. And the idea that you play the Super Bowl on a long weekend so everybody gets the day after off, it's chef's kiss as far as I'm concerned. I would love to know what the bye weeks are, like how they – this first bye weeks, how they separate those out. Like, for example, could a section of teams have – 2 weeks off in a row? I think that would be unfair.
Yeah, that would be unfair.
Like if you had, like, let's say it's week 13 is the Pro Bowl bye week. Would you have teams have off week 12 and 13? Probably not.
No, probably
but
not.
I like the idea of having a second bye week with the Pro Bowl events in that bye week.
Right.
And then pushing back the season so that you have Super Bowl weekend is a three-day weekend.
Yeah, and
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I really like the idea of the two bye weeks from Joe Burrow, and we'll get the Adams call in just a second on the scheduling as well. But so the Titans, looking at their schedule, they've got a week five bye, and this kind of lays in perfectly to what I was thinking after looking at it, is kind of what Joe was saying. You could have a bye week, you know, after that first game in September, or in December. After that, this year it would be against the Commanders, and you would be on the road. So the Titans would be finishing up a 2-week consecutive time on the road. You have the Texans, the Commanders, then they come home and play the Jags in week 14. Well, the Titans could have, you know, that week off where it would be Jacksonville, and then everything's pushed up 1 week. I would like that because you've also got that early bye in week five. And I would say, as a rule, Adam, you know, you could run into that back-to-back bye, but I would even make a rule, if it was me, just thinking out loud here, if you had, you know, that one thing in place, you cannot have a bye week back-to-back and no more than 3 weeks apart, probably 3 or 4 weeks apart. I would say, actually, I'll stand on this, 4 weeks. You cannot have, you know, two back-to-back, and it can't be any less than 4 weeks is what I would say for that. So that's interesting. I think Joe Burrow sounds like a genius, at least on its face, for the idea, but will the CBA actually agree on something like this? That's yet to be seen.
Let's hear what Adam in Portland has to say. Adam, thanks for calling.
Dude, I don't think he's like, you know, this is like ground earth shattering information he's giving you. The Pro Bowl has sucked forever. And I'm with you, Adam. Like, I remember the Pro Bowl when it was like McNair with the backwards hat and he's throwing 80-yard bombs. Like, that challenge was a cool challenge to me, but I really haven't cared about it since then. Like, I knew that Manning and Brady were probably never going to be in the field together because one of them was always playing in the Super Bowl. And that just tells you, like, it's always been a joke. And it's crazy to think, like, how much further hockey and baseball has come with their all-star game than football has at this point. Like, there's such a revenue miss there, right? Like, as far as, like, jersey sales and participation. Like, I love those skills challenges. They were cool. Bring back something vintage. I don't know, dude. Like, there's still a huge miss in there. So I like Burrow saying, yeah, let's enhance the Pro Bowl and do it this way. But I don't think it's, like, earth-shattering information, man.
Thanks, Adam. Yeah, it's not like, you know, Joe Burrow did not just, you know, blow everybody's mind, but I really just like hearing him and the Part of My Take guys lay it out. I really like it. And by the way, the best Pro Bowl moment of all time was Sean Taylor trucking Brian Moorman in the, I think it was either the 2006 or 2007 Pro Bowl, when players actually played in the Pro Bowl, like they actually tried in the Pro Bowl. And that's the issue. It's like, and one thing that the NFL hasn't done, that, to Adam's point, maybe Major League Baseball and the NHL have, is that there are incentives to winning the All-Star games.
Yeah, it's money.
For the NHL, I think this year there was like $1 million, right?
Yeah,
like,
and then they split it up amongst the team. It was like the playoffs.
And
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, in Major League Baseball, the winning league gets home field advantage in the World Series. Is that still
thing? I think
the,
so.
Is
I believe they got
thing?
Rid of that.
Okay.
Did they
well,
really?
They,
okay.
They did do that at one point.
Yes.
To make it worth, you know, make the players try to play. But that's the thing about the Pro Bowl is, it may be the 2006 or 2007 Pro Bowl, which was almost 20 years ago since the last time I was like, I'm going to actively watch the Pro Bowl. And now, because it's less of an actual game, and or do they, don't they do flag football?
Yeah, it's flag football.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. It's just not, you know, I understand what the, I mean, I guess I understand what the NFL was trying to do. It's just not entertaining.
No.
But the one thing that we have learned about football fans is that during downtimes of football, of the NFL, they will find other ways to watch football, whether it's the XFL or the USFL, if I'm not mistaken.
The CFL.
Yeah, the CFL, all that stuff. I don't really understand the CFL. Is it a Rouge? Is that the thing in the CFL? I don't know.
I think so. Maybe something like that.
I know all the teams in the CFL. I mean, I can talk about like the Hamilton Tiger Cats if you want. Like,
really?
I can name, well, not intelligently.
This is fascinating.
I can just name the teams. You know, the Montreal Alouettes.
The Argo.
The Toronto Argonauts.
The Argonauts.
All that stuff. Either way, the thing I like most about it, well, there are two things. One is putting the Pro Bowl in a window where people will actually watch it.
Mm.
And maybe more players will participate. because it's, you know, or, and the other thing is Super Bowl Sunday should absolutely be a national holiday. Like, not a, I mean, it's not going to be a federal holiday. It's not going to be like 4th of July, Memorial Day, Labor Day, Super Bowl Sunday. It's not, it's not going to, I think that would take an act of Congress to make that happen.
Yeah.
But just having it on a long weekend. I mean, that's one of the downsides of Super Bowl Sunday. You're eating a ton of food. Maybe you're enjoying an adult beverage or two or three or four. And then you have to go to work the next day. You're full. You're hungover, maybe. You don't want to go to work. Yeah. So pushing the schedule back so that the game is on a long weekend, I think, is a really smart idea.
Yeah, and sometimes the times of the Super Bowl can be kind of whack. I thought this year's was a pretty much of like a nice happy medium, I would say. And also, I had to look this up just to be sure. The players do get $88,000 for playing in the Pro Bowl, by the way. So there is at least some player incentive for sure. So there's at least a little bit, you know, that's like, you know, a couple of McDonald's visits for some guys probably, but that's not horrendous. It's also like not great, I guess, to their standard, but it's definitely intriguing. I would definitely like it to be the winner of the Pro Bowl, like that conference gets, you know, home field advantage at the Super Bowl, or they have, you know, the kickoff, because Nike, everything's changing around that now too. So the kickoff, it could be someone has dibs at receiving or kicking. I mean, it's really early for that to happen at the Pro Bowl, I would say. But there needs to be something in place, Adam, where there's more incentive for the players. Also, the NHL is okay at the All-Star stuff. They're getting, you know, a little bit better. The awards are god-awful, by the way.
Yeah, but it's hard to watch the NHL awards.
That's just awful. But if the NFL can put a better product out there for what they would call a game, they need to improve that for sure. Yes. Flag football is not going to cut it.
Yeah, 615-737-1025. Joe Burrow lays out what his ideal NFL schedule looks like. What do you think of his idea? And do you have any suggestions on top of that for what the ideal NFL schedule looks like? We'll get back to that on the other side. Adam Vinga, Nick Heizer, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jason Big Joe Show on ESPN, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vinga, Nick Heizer, Nick Frazier, dancing up a storm back there.
Sing it, Adam.
No one wants to hear me sing on the air. That would be the end of the Big Chase and Joe Show.
Yeah, have a little fun, baby.
I did change the name of the show just now. It's now the Big Chase and Joe Show.
I mean, they're both big men.
They're both
grown men.
Yes, they're both grown men. The Big Chase and Joe Show. Yesterday, I called it the Chase and Big Show Show.
Yes, you did.
Starring Chase McCabe and Big Show Paul White, apparently.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, now that I'm no longer distracted by Frazier.
There was one nice big idea from one other big man in the NFL, Adam.
Yes. Now, Joe Burrow is not as big.
No.
But he did have a great idea, I thought, about the NFL schedule, which he shared on the Pardon My Take podcast, where he talked about making it an 18-game schedule, building in two bye weeks, the second bye week being a full bye week for the NFL. So every team off, I think he said around week 13.
Yep.
Doing the Pro Bowl games during week 13 in an effort to boost the ratings for the Pro Bowl, which I don't know what their Pro Bowl ratings are. I'm sure they're not great.
Well, let's find out.
Okay, well, you look that up. And then moving the schedule back so that Super Bowl Sunday falls on, I think, President's Day weekend. So most people would have the Monday off. So having a day off from work the day after the Super Bowl, which I think would be a great idea. So, I mean, also, if that means fewer preseason games, you have the ratings? Do you have the ratings?
Yes,
okay.
I do. Sorry.
Let's hear it.
Frazier and I were having a small conversation.
Yeah, you guys were having a little powwow without me.
Producer conversation.
Yeah, I feel left out.
Yeah, it's okay. EAS is the problem sometimes. It just does it every month. It's all right. So the Pro Bowl games drew a combined 5.75 million viewers, this most recent one. It was an 8.5% drop over the last year's edition because it was a new format. So there is that, at least. I was looking up what the Super Bowl ratings were for this year. I would be interested to
see. Astronomical compared to that.
Absolutely. But then again, they just need the change so much with the Pro Bowl, and it's been evident. I'd like to see it categorized by year, Adam, to see what the ratings were for the Pro Bowl the last 20 years, maybe 25, because I feel like people were wanting to watch it, because you talked about it earlier. Like, there was that big hit that you mentioned. I don't remember that one from 2006.
Yeah, because you were barely alive.
Right, exactly. But then again, my eyes were always on hockey as it was. But I think it's important to keep in mind it's not been a desirable product for quite some time now. And it feels like the younger players, Joe Burrow is a good example of anyone that's probably 25 and younger is going, this is not good. Like, this is a waste of our time. It's a family vacation, basically, because they've either gone to Hawaii or it's Miami. And I think it's going to stay in Orlando. I'm sorry, Orlando. It'll be down there for quite some time. I forgot how many years they agreed on.
Went to Las Vegas 1 year.
That's right. They were in Vegas. Yeah. But regardless, it's a vacation.
I'll say this much about it. Like, if you add two bye weeks, if I'm the NFL, I would restructure, like, the scheduling to prioritize more of out-of-conference games. And then more for division games, if that's either in the later half of the season
or
the first half. Just because, like, you look at the season, and you look at the Steelers for prime example this year, I think four of their games in the division is, like, in the second half of the season.
I believe four of their final six games for the Titans are AFC South games.
So, like, with that being said, you want to add a bye week before that, before the gauntlet. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So then you have a bye week earlier in the season after also, all your out-of-division games.
Would you want to play one of your divisional opponents three times if you had to choose that possibly? If that was part of the conversation with a longer season, would you want to play another team for a third time? I should play them twice.
Right.
I think they wouldn't switch that up. I think they'd just add an extra out-of-conference game.
You think so?
Just because everything just fits right. You have everything that's two games. You play every team in your division twice.
Or there's a rotation every year, too. It could be someone. Yeah.
That's possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I wonder what that 18th game would be, whether something seems, especially since you're playing the other teams in your division, as you said, Nick, you play them twice every year. I feel like you probably add like a non-divisional game, like either an AFC NFC game or just another game in your conference outside of your division.
Best two out of three, though, you know,
because Goodell said it. He doesn't like the preseason at all. Neither does anybody. Yeah,
the preseason is terrible. Yes. Like it's. Now, I mean, even now, there are what? Are there three preseason?
Three.
Yeah, there used to be four. Yeah. Now there are three, which is good. I feel like there should be two. Like, you know, get one dress rehearsal for the starters, and then one guy's trying to make the team.
And
you don't need
also,
more than that.
Yeah, and then they're also doing these, you know, joint practices. That's pretty much all
that
you
joint
need.
Practices have become the actual preseason games when you go head-to-head with the top players on the other team. Yeah, that's exactly right. The joint practices have become the new – used to be the third preseason game where the starters would get a half or something like that. Now the joint practices have become, you know, the new preseason games. I mean, I know that some teams require you to buy preseason games as part of your season ticket package, which just seems absurd. I feel like that was something. Maybe I'm wrong. But, yeah, preseason football, man, like – kudos to you if you are interested in spending money to go to a preseason game. Now, sometimes, obviously those tickets are cheaper, and that might be your opportunity to go to an NFL game. But I try to watch Titans preseason games, man. I put them on. You know, I see our dear friend Corey Curtis on the sideline chopping it up, but I just can't. After like a quarter, I'm like, all right, I got to stop watching this. I need to watch it, but I don't really want to watch it. So if anything stops the NFL preseason, or at least shrinks the NFL preseason, I think that would be great. But I really like how many of us have gone to a Super Bowl party? And look, when you go to a Super Bowl party, you lose all control, man. Like, I say this about airports all the time. The rules of polite society, airports do not abide by those rules. I've seen people drinking beers at 8:30 in the morning at airports.
At NASCAR, too, but yeah.
I've never been to a NASCAR event, so I can't speak to that. But the rules that govern polite society do not apply at airports. They also do not apply at Super Bowl parties.
No.
And any SEC college tailgate on planet Earth.
Yeah, that too.
Which I love. Those are the best type of parties to go to.
You go to a Super Bowl party, and you see all this food. you know, nachos, pizza, wings, you know, chips, all the alcohol you could possibly drink, and you and no one can have self-control in that situation. Then you realize the game's over. It's 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. You're dragging yourself off of your friend's couch, and you realize, oh, crap, I got to go to work tomorrow. It's just the worst feeling. So let's remove that from the equation.
Right.
And let everybody just go nuts on Super Bowl Sunday by knowing that you're going to have Monday off.
Yes, so, because our economy would go nuts if we had a day off and we spent more for that Sunday.
Yeah. Think about how bars and things like that would rack up the dough.
I mean,
even more
great.
So, knowing that you wouldn't have to go to work mm-hmm. the next day. So I think Joe Burrow, like Adam in Portland said, is it like a completely out of the box idea?
No.
But it was nice to hear it laid out, and I like the idea. So let's hope that the NFL eventually gets to the 18 game model. Currently it's at 17. Roger Goodell is open to the idea of 18.
He is.
Let's hope that Goodell was listening to Burrow, one of the stars of his league, and they eventually get to 18 games. 6-1-5, sorry.
I was going to add, you are paying for preseason games, by the way, if you are a season ticket holder in the NFL. I had to get that out there. I wanted to know myself. So.
Okay, so there you go. So let's remove the preseason games. Let's get to meaningful football as soon as we possibly can and get more of it. 615-737-1025. This time of year, it's talking season. SEC Media Days are next week in Dallas. They were here last year. I was there for SEC Media Days last year. It's a really interesting experience. But it's also ranking season. Not just talking season, it's ranking season. So, where does Jeffrey Simmons rank among the best defensive ends, defensive tackles in the NFL? We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan, Nick Heizer in for Chase and Big Joe. 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase and Big Joe Show, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, the game. Adam Vingan, Nick Heizer, Nick Frazier. Talking ranking season, because it's that time of the year. Now, Jeremy Fowler over at ESPN.com has done this for many years. Around this time, he polls people in and around the league and gets a top 10 by position. So he started yesterday with the running back group, which around here we would always look at because it involved Derrick Henry. But Derrick Henry isn't here anymore. I believe he was number 9 on the list of running backs, which is a pretty far drop for Derrick Henry considering he dominated those rankings for many years. But today, Jeremy Fowler unveiled the next position group, the defensive tackle group. And, of course, Jeffrey Simmons has been a mainstay on this list for the past few years. And it got me when I saw the position group that Fowler was ranking today. I was intrigued by one thing when it came to Jeffrey Simmons. Aaron Donald dominated this list for years. He's a Hall of Famer. First ballot, I think. Hall of Famer. But he retired. So what does that mean for the defensive tackle group and who will succeed Aaron Donald as the number one defensive tackle in the NFL? And what could that mean for Jeffrey Simmons? How far could he move up the list now that Aaron Donald has retired? Now, for reference, last year, Aaron Donald was number one on the list, to no surprise. Chris Jones in Kansas City was number 2. And Jeff Simmons was number 3. So last year, Jeffrey Simmons ranked as the 3rd best defensive tackle in the league, according to a poll done by Jeremy Fowler, talking to executives, coaches, and scouts. So this year, Jeffrey Simmons has actually fallen down the list from number 3 to number 4. So the top 3, Chris Jones has taken the number 1 spot, according to Fowler's constituents, I guess you could say. Chris Jones now takes over the Aaron Donald spot. Quinnen Williams of the New York Jets went from 4 to 2, jumping Jeffrey Simmons. And Dexter Lawrence of the New York Giants went from number 6 to number 3, before Jeffrey Simmons at 4 and Justin Madubuike of the Baltimore Ravens at 5. So, Jeffrey Simmons, number 4 on this list. I asked the Knicks if Frazier is available as well.
Yeah, I am available.
Is 4 too high, too low, or just right for Jeffrey Simmons on this list?
I think it's a happy medium for the most part. I think I would have been okay to make an argument for number 3, perhaps. I know that Dexter Lawrence is there at number 3, but Yeah, I feel okay with Jeffrey being where he is in this ranking. And maybe it's a little bit generous to give him four, because I know that even when Paul Kaharsky's kind of talked about him at times, you know, he's got to step up his game getting paid as much as he has been. You know, he got that big deal, and it's not necessarily been the expectation I think perhaps we as, you know, consumers of the Titans have probably seen. I think that's pretty fair to say. So I wonder how motivated Jeffrey is this season. I know he's already excited about week one because he wants to – I heard him make a comment about, yeah, the boy with the nails or the – with the painted nails.
Yes, referring to Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I'm going
to
go grab him, yeah.
Paints his nails, which is totally fine, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Frazier, you could share your thoughts, but I think four feels like a happy medium, you know, I guess. You could maybe argue he could be at three, perhaps.
I think he should be higher on the list. I think he should be right at number two. I think he
really?
Should be Chris Jones and then Jeffrey Simmons.
Interesting.
Just because, obviously, this list, to me, just seems like they're giving Jeffrey Simmons the, I don't want to say the benefit of the doubt because it's not the benefit of the doubt. He was at four on this list because of his injuries. That's simply why. That is simply why he's at four. If he's not injured last season at all with that, you know, minor knee injury he had or whatever it may be, whatever lower body injury it was, I think he's at two easily. He is knocked on this list of four because of injuries. But if he stays healthy, like Nick's saying, and he plays up to the expectation, which I think he will, I mean, sky's the limit for the guy. I think he is the best defensive tackle in the league. Just because of his size, the way he attacks offensive linemen, he's able to hit the gaps harder than anybody else in the league. That's just how I see it. And obviously, the top two players on that list, at one and two in my opinion, would be Chris Jones and Jeffrey Simmons. Where'd they go to college at? Defensive Line University, Mississippi State.
Oh, I know. That's your favorite.
I mean, that's where they all develop defensive linemen.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it as well. I think Mississippi State develops really good defensive linemen, and then LSU develops really good cornerbacks.
Yeah.
But for this list, it goes Chris Jones and then Jeffrey Simmons. The rest can just go off in the dust.
Mm. I think the issue for Simmons is that, and this is what Fowler refers to in the story, he calls him the classic eye test player. Mm. His stats aren't always gaudy, but coaches and scouts know he wrecks game plans. And that's the point. I think he had 5.5 sacks last year. So not impressive totals in terms of sacks. But as it says right here, one head scout says, quote, when he's focused and sets out to make a lot of plays, he's pretty much unblockable. I think he'll have a big year similar to Madubuike in that same Baltimore scheme last year. Another personnel evaluator says, quote, his power is probably the best in the league. I don't think he's played his best recently, though. So that may be why Simmons is lower on this list versus Williams and Lawrence, who I think are more consistent at getting to the quarterback, and Chris Jones, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chris Jones is the new Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
Now that Donald has retired, Chris Jones is going to be the number one defensive tackle until he decides not to play anymore.
Obviously, that's the easy out. I think that's an easy out answer because you play for Kansas City, the team that's always winning Super Bowls. That's an easy out to say that he's the best defensive tackle in the league, sure, which is understandable. But if we're looking for the next Aaron Donald, it's Jeffrey Simmons by far. And I'm not just saying that because of a Mississippi State bias or whatever. Heck, Chris Jones was a Mississippi State guy as well. That's awesome. No, this is definitely something to look at here. It's a Jeffrey Simmons is the next Aaron Donald due to the fact that he's more shiftier on the defensive line.
Yeah,
and
I guess.
And Adam mentioned when in that article that they game plan for Jeffrey Simmons. Sure, the stats are not out of this world crazy, but you got to look at it from a perspective of if teams are game planning for your defensive tackle and your defensive tackle is basically disrupting your offensive scheme, you're having to double team one defensive tackle, that job done. Then you have other guys on the defensive line. Like, this has been the whole narrative this offseason. Can you get that next Denico Autry for Jeffrey Simmons? And if you don't get that guy, then why on God's green earth are you going to have a guy like Jeffrey Simmons on your team? You might as well just have three or four, like, I guess, mediocre defensive linemen.
And that's the point with Simmons is he's going to have – I mean, how much is he going to have to do on his own to be, you know, that game breaker? Because, you know, can you count on Arden Key and Harold Landry, you know, to get to the quarterback consistently? You know, the big question, of course, big both in size and in, you know, is T'Vondre Sweat. What is he going to look like when he gets out onto the field? That's a huge question mark.
And that's the golden ticket. That's Willy Wonka's golden ticket right there. No pun intended with the chocolate reference. Because the guy likes his, I think they said Snickers, right? That in one of the press conferences?
I think so.
One of those two. But anyways, with that being said, if you have Jeffrey Simmons that's going to pressure the offensive line on one side of the ball, it, in my opinion, gives more trust into defensive backs like L'Jarius Sneed, Chidobe Awuzie. You have those two cornerstone guys on your outside. If you bring more pressure to the inside and it's a passing first league, in my opinion, then that leaves less pressure on your cornerbacks. It's an easier job for them.
Yeah.
That's what is looking like on paper.
That's where Jeffrey Simmons is going to become a huge X factor, and maybe he's number one next year if he has a big year. So there is a lot of pressure for him to have a good year, albeit, like you said, the way that they're going to play this year is going to be a huge, huge factor for that. So, but, you know, also how much of a difference will the scheme make as well? You know, that's something that they're going to have to adjust to. We talk about teams adjusting here in town that have new coaching staffs, you know, like the Predators. Titans and Preds have tons of similarities from what I've seen the last 2 years. But it's going to be a matter of, can Jeffrey Simmons live up to the hype? Because he knows that there's been talk around him for a long time, especially coming out of college. He's put pressure on himself. And I think he understands that last year was sort of a down year for himself. That was not the expectation, you know, from others going into last season. So we'll see how he does, and we'll see how healthy he stays, more importantly. So this is a good ranking.
Yeah, it's important for him to stay on the field, especially if T'Vondre Sweat is not readily available. If they are both unavailable, I don't think opposing quarterbacks are going to have any pressure on them next season. They'll have all day in the pocket. So to recap, Jeffrey Simmons ranked number four on the defensive tackle list put together by Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, who talks to executives, coaches, and scouts and ranks every position group. Chris Jones, number one, now that Aaron Donald has retired. Quinnen Williams of the Jets, number two. Dexter Lawrence of the Giants, number three. Simmons, number four. Justin Madubuike, number five. So those are your top five defensive tackles in the NFL, according to Jeremy Fowler's polling. What do you think of where Jeffrey Simmons ranks on this list? Is number four right? Is he, like Frazier said, ranked too low? Is he ranked just right, like Heaser thinks? Let us know, 615-737-1025. Adam Ving and Nick Heaser in for Chase and Big Joe, 1025-1063, The Game. Chase and Big Joe Show, brought to you by Nashville Omni Hotel. Adam Ving and Nick Heaser, Nick Frazier, talking about Jeremy Fowler's rankings of the best defensive tackles in the NFL, according to his polling of executive scouts and coaches. Jeffrey Simmons comes in this season at number four, down from number three a year ago. Last year it was Aaron Donald, Chris Jones, Jeffrey Simmons. According to this list, he has been passed by Quinnen Williams and Dexter Lawrence. He is now number four on the list. And we were just talking about, you know, how much can Simmons really do on his own? T'Vondre Sweat is going to need to be available, and he's going to need to make an impact. Because if you only have to worry about Jeffrey Simmons, despite the fact that he can blow up game plans, if teams can put as much focus on Jeffrey Simmons as possible, it's going to make it hard for the Titans to get to the quarterback. I guess let's start with this. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons had 5.5 sacks last year. He played 12 games. He had 5.5 sacks. His career high is 8.5 in 2021. I mean, what should we expect? What should be, to use this term again, the baseline for Jeffrey Simmons in terms of a sack total? I think we would all agree that 5.5 over 12 games, not enough.
No.
He had 7.5 sacks in 15 games two seasons ago. So what do you guys think? Like, what should be the bare minimum of sacks for Jeffrey Simmons if he plays a full healthy season?
Yeah, and I know that Frazier being, you know, someone that's very familiar with him, but I think also looking at a few seasons ago, he's coming off a 7.5. He's also coming off an 8.5 as well. And those were great seasons defensively for the two-tone blue, right? So if you have all the cylinders clicking and he's got 26.5 overall in his career, I mean, 5.5 is pretty disappointing. I mean, you know, that's laundry money, I would say, for what you would want out of him. I mean, I would say the expectation, the baseline, Adam, for me at least this year, maybe get to 7 sacks is what I would say. We'll do 7.5 because Frazier and I talk about betting on our show every now and then, so I'll give it a little bit of a half little dash there.
There you go.
But I like 7.5 for Jeffrey Simmons this year, and that should be a pretty reasonable goal for him considering their schedule this year as well. If you think differently, let me know, Frazier. But
no, I think you hit it right on the head. I think 7.5 is a good baseline number. Obviously, it should be higher. Not for a baseline, but I think he should exceed the 7.5. If Tavondre Sweat does pan out for the Titans, I think Jeffrey Simmons easily could open up, you know, maybe to 8, 8.5 to some career-like records this season.
Yeah, should.
Like I said before in the last segment, when you have a lot of pressure from your defensive linemen, you can trust your secondary a lot more. And so that's kind of another reason why I think the Titans are kind of waiting a little bit on signing a safety. I'm not trying to pivot the subject here.
No, but you're not wrong.
I think that's kind of why the Titans might be waiting to sign a safety, is because you want to maybe see what you got on the roster right now and see if Tavondre Sweat does end up, I guess, losing this weight that everybody keeps talking about and getting healthy. Mm-hmm. And when you get a guy like that healthy, maybe you don't have to go out and get another safety. Maybe you can just go and see what you already have on the roster.
Right.
That's just, you know, what kind of adds up in my brain.
Yeah, I think that's a good baseline for 7.5. I mean, could you make the case for, you know, 8, knowing that he would have a great season? Sure, but I think 7.5 is a good standard for Jeff, especially after what kind of standard he set his first few seasons in the league. Adam, is there a number that comes to mind for you?
Well, one thing you have to keep in mind is that 11.5 sacks just walked out the door when Danico Autry signed with Houston, of all teams.
Yeah, right.
So that is something that Jeffrey Simmons is going to help replace. Now, it shouldn't all be on Jeffrey Simmons to replace that. It needs to be a combined effort, obviously. But, you know, Simmons needs to up his total by a few, I think. I think 7.5 to 8 seems like a good number. I guess the question is, where else is the lost production from Autry coming from? Can we count on Tavondre Sweat? Is it coming from Harold Landry? Is it like where are the other sacks that were lost by Autry coming from?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the question I have.
Maybe. You can't forget about Harold Landry and Arden Key. You did make a good point about Landry. Say, Arden Key, I've been seeing stuff on social media. A lot of players do this as well, where they post, you know, their workout regimen. I mean, Arden Key's been getting after it. I obviously, players kind of work in the dark, as they say. They kind of work not behind a camera. But Arden Key's been, you know, putting it out there on social media that he's putting in the work. So, with that being said, this Denard Wilson defense might be a team to be reckoned with, a defense to be reckoned with.
You know, Rand's been cooking, and hopefully his players do as well. But the biggest question mark is going to be what Sweat is like. And is he putting in the, no pun intended, sweat this off season to make sure that he has a great rookie season? And so everyone's in that, you know, ballpark of, you know, we're here to fix the O-line with Mr. Callahan and everything. And, well, on the other side of the ball, it's going to be, can the guys live up to their own standard? And so that's going to be huge, and you cannot lean on Rashad Weaver and these depth guys to do that. Now, if they have a few sacks, that's great, but where you make up for it, you have to hope that, yeah, Harold Landry has a good time. But also, I think you're right, Frazier. I think that, you know, Arden Key is someone that we've talked about ad nauseum at times, so he might be someone to keep an eye on for sure next season.
Right, I mean, and, you know, Denard Wilson was part of a Ravens defense that had 60 combined sacks last season, which was the number one team in the league in that regard. The Titans were much further down that list. They had 45 sacks during the regular season. So, yeah, Denard Wilson is sort of an X factor in all of this, maybe not talked about a ton with all of the, you know, with Brian Callahan also being new, Will Levis, the additions at receiver. A lot has been made of what's happening on the offensive side of the ball, but there are a lot of questions on the defensive side of the ball. Frazier mentioned the safety position. That's a big question mark. You know, L'Jarius Sneed says his knees are fine, and the guy plays in games, right? But will that hold up? The Titans made a significant investment in L'Jarius Sneed. So, you know, Simmons, I feel like, being in the top 5 among defensive tackles in the NFL, according to this ranking by Jeremy Fowler, I think that's right. I don't think anyone would argue that Jeffrey Simmons is not a top five defensive tackle, but I'm wondering how much help he's going to have with the loss of Denico Autry, Azeez Al-Shaair, who led the team in tackles last season, if I'm not mistaken, also out the door.
Houston.
Yes, also to Houston. Yeah, the Texans took all of the Titans players, and that's going to be a really interesting matchup when those two teams face during the regular season. So, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, there's a lot on his plate, and that's not just because he's a big dude and he likes to eat. He has a lot to do to help this Titans defense get over the hump and help the Titans get to where they want to go. But we'll have to leave that here. Nick, it's been great to work with you guys for the past 2 days. You guys will be in this spot Wednesday and Thursday from 9 to 11. Looking forward to that. I will be on with Big Joe tomorrow and Thursday from 2 to 6 on Stillman and Company. Thank you guys for listening. Willie and D-Mace coming up next, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.